January 7th, Podcast 4. Welcome to the Upstaging Gentlemen Podcast. This is Michael with Play With Your Food Productions.
And Nathan with Legendary Productions.
That was some enthusiasm right there.
Yeah, I think I'm excited about today. We've got some questions and topics that people are reaching out to us about.
Yes. Well, welcome to the show, everybody. So we're going to start off with some questions from everybody. And Nathan, you got one?
Yeah. Let me pull it up. I didn't know I was going first.
Oh, sorry.
Do you want to go first or are you pulling yours up too?
Okay, I got it right here.
Okay, good, because I have to find mine.
All right. So this one is from Sylvia.
Hi, Sylvia.
Hey, Sylvia. How you doing?
Does it say where she's from or no?
Yeah. Actually, I know Sylvia.
Oh, okay. Hi, Sylvia.
Yeah, I know Sylvia. Sylvia is friends with Colby, who was on the podcast with us a little bit ago.
And, oh, yeah, I remember that.
So that prompted, I think, Sylvia to she listened to the podcast because she heard Colby on there.
Oh, I love
it. Cool. Then she wrote in with questions. So Sylvia is an aspiring playwright herself, and she wants to know, what advice do you have to starting playwrights? Is there a method to it? What inspires the script? And what advice do you have for somebody starting out? So what inspires the script, the storyline?
Yeah.
Just remember, you are telling a story, and that the story inspires everything. You just take it back to storytelling. It's like the oldest form of theater right there. And so you're telling a story, write it like you're telling a story. Remember the story. Don't get off the story. I've said the word story now like 20 times. It's because when people start writing scripts, they sit down and think, I'm going to tell a story, and bam, they get sidetracked. Happened to me. When I was first starting off, it happens to, everybody. Like it's an amateur playwright thing that you do. You get off track of the story. So how do you do that? Well, you might start focusing on some characters. You might get more interested in a character than the story that you're telling. Like if I was writing a story about Nathan, and it's Nathan's day to go to the beach, and I'm going to write a story about Nathan goes to the beach. But on the way, Nathan stops at a gas station, and maybe there's a funny guy that's delivering hot dogs. And I'm like, oh, this guy's really funny. I'm going to have him make jokes. Oh, I'm going to make this guy a big character in there. Da, 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 da. Okay, well, now my story of Nathan is going to the beach is off on the hot dog salesman. Right. And that happens all the time. He's like, but I've got something witty. Oh, this character just has to say this. No, focus on the story
push
that you're
story.
Telling.
Push the story. Yep.
And that inspires everything. So there's a short answer there. The other part of the question I'm going to answer is, what advice do you have? Just write. Write all the time. Practice your dialogue. Practice writing. Rewrite. Just dive into it. Don't think that one day I want to write a play. No, that day is today. Write your play today. Well, what if it's not any good? It won't be.
Well, Mike, that was my issue. I've only written three. You've written 1,000 titles, but I've only written like 3 musicals. And that was my hardest part the first time. It was like, I wanted this perfect outline. I want this perfect outline before I start writing this story, which I think is important to have an outline, a concept. But until it took me probably like 2 months to just put pen to paper and start telling the story. But I realized as soon as I started writing on the paper, I was like, oh, wait, my concept and my outline is actually coming to life, because I kept getting stuck in the details. And I'm not saying that's the right way to do it, but it just took me a long time to just start writing because I was afraid that I wasn't going to be able to tell the story right, or I was going to miss something. But I ended up finding out I got rid of a lot of junk I didn't need that was in my outline that I didn't end up needing. That didn't help push the story. So I think that's a true thing. Just write.
Yeah, just start in. John was laughing because I said, you're worried your first draft isn't going to be good. Well, it won't be.
Yeah.
But think about it. You have to give yourself that permission to fail there, because the first, like, that's why so many people don't start. Like, oh, but it won't be good. No, it won't be. But you know
build
what?
Off something.
But maybe 10 drafts down the line, it will be. But your first draft, I mean, just honestly, it's probably not going to be. and you need to give yourself that freedom. But yeah, like you said, give yourself something to build off of, because once you have a first draft, then you can picture what it is, and then you can identify where all the improvements need to be made. I don't know. I mean, I just think it's like that with anything. I mean, your first time writing a song, you're like, I want to be a musician, but have you ever written a song before? No, I don't want my first song to suck, though. It will.
Yeah, it will.
But I mean, that's the encouragement. I mean, it just will. Like, give yourself the freedom to know that. Like, 10 years down the line of you writing songs, you are going to be a much better songwriter than you are right now.
Well, I think it's okay. You might even be pleasantly surprised. It maybe doesn't suck as bad as you think, and there's a good foundation too. But if you're just afraid because it's going to suck, then you're not going to get anywhere.
And you know what? We did say this on an earlier podcast, I remember. The way that we perceive ourselves now, like, it may come across as a triumph to you, the song that you wrote or the script that you wrote early on. And in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, if you're still at it, you may look back on it and be like, what was I thinking? Because you've grown so much. And it kind of goes back. I think that we likened it at the time on the podcast to a kid that entered the spelling bee in like second grade and he won first place. And he's like, I'm the champion. And it's the biggest deal to him ever. Like, I won. And then, you know, like 20 years later, you can't be saying that anymore, because it's like, you won. What did you do? I spelled cat. Like, that's hardly an accomplishment. But to that second grader, yeah, it is. Like, but now you're, you know, well into college, or you've got a career, and it's like, okay, I've grown a lot since then. It's not the accomplishment that it once was. And so just saying, but just jump in there and start getting your wins. Like, write, experience, write some more, think about it, develop, and stick with the story. All right. Do you got your question? Thanks for the question, Sylvia.
That was great. Yes. The question is, how do you deal with casting family members? Even if they deserve the part, but you don't want to cast them because it looks like you're showing favorites, or casting them when you know they shouldn't have the role? Well, I'll let you start with that, because
I haven't had to deal with that much, but like, I'm getting to the point where I've got one daughter who is going to turn 16 in about 2 weeks.
Wow.
And another daughter who is not far behind her, and they're both really getting to be quite good on stage. Then they both have, you know, in my opinion, very, very good voices. You know, it's hard not to be biased, but right. I'm sitting there, like, I just saw my daughter Hannah in her school play, Junie B. Jones, and she played the lead role, and I'm just like, it's probably going to get edited, but damn, she was good. Like, maybe John will leave that one in there for us.
No, leave it. It's real.
But I told her afterwards, I was like, dude, I mean, when she was really little, I saw her play Willy Wonka, and she, you know, she sang the world of your imagination, and like, she was so good, even just little. And I told her, like, when she played Junie B. Jones, I was like, man, it was like somebody a while back, before they, without even knowing you, wrote you this part, and you just took it, and like, you just absolutely blew it out of the water. You were so good in this part. And then my other daughter Haley also really, I feel like, just shines on stage. Mm-hmm. And I don't help them like with this stuff. I don't know if it's just some innate ability that they have, or if it's just because they've been exposed to it their whole life, but they don't ever come out and be like, Dad, can you run lines with me or whatever. They go away on their own. They tell me, hey, I got this part. And like, are you going to sing some of the songs for me? Nope. Come to the show. And I do. And then that's the first time I ever see it. And I'm just like, wow. That said, that puts me in a predicament, because if they were ever going to be in something that I was directing, they really are that good. And I don't want to begrudge them just because they're my daughters, but that would be a real thing. Like, because it's like, oh, how do I do this? Like, I think that I would need other outside voices to make that decision.
What if they don't make the decision the way you want it? Yeah, it's hard.
I mean, that may be the way it is. But like the flip side, though, I had a, and I'm going to talk about both sides of the coins on this, because like we had my high school theater teacher. It was the same way. Great lady. She literally changed my life. If I hadn't met her, would have gone in a totally different direction. Probably wouldn't even know you.
Wow.
So, your life might be better, but mine would suck.
Yeah. Mine would suck.
But she had also an immensely talented daughter, and she had a beautiful voice, and she could sing. But I remember all the girls in high school, when it came time to time for audition, they're like, well, we know who's getting this one. And it was hard because, like, the girl, to her credit, had an incredible voice. But it's just like there was also that it's going to your daughter, isn't it? Like type of a thing. So everybody around was like, okay, we acknowledge the fact that she's got a great voice. But do you think anyone else may ever get a chance here? Or is it just always going to be going to, her, the kids? But you're in the same situation.
I am. So real quick, I'm going to say something that this rang. That used to get me so mad when I was a kid. But I went to a Christian school, and my aunt worked there. My dad worked there. My uncle worked there. Like my whole family. It was our church. It was a Christian school. It was our church as well. But everyone I knew there. And was sometimes, like, say a kid would throw a piece of trash on the ground. When we were younger, teachers were allowed to say, go pick up trash for littering, or go stand against the wall and you can't play recess. I mean, there was consequences back then. But so say you did it, Mike. You're at a table and you threw a piece of trash. My dad would come up and go, Michael, go pick up 25 pieces of trash, dude, for littering. I would do it, and he'd come up and go, Nathan, pick up 500 pieces of trash. And I would say to him, Dad, you're harder on me. He goes, I am harder on you. I expect more from you. And people are watching me to make sure that I'm not doing favoritisms. They used to make me so upset, but I get it. Being married in the past, and even having siblings and friends that come out for roles, and even my kids coming out and doing theater, seeing them come out and do stuff, and I sit here, and if they're talking during rehearsal, I don't go, hey guys, keep it down. I go, hey, knock it off. I'm a little more intense, because I feel like I have to be, because I want them to be an example for me, and that I'm not going to give favoritisms, So I'm like, oh no, I'm doing what my dad did. It's very much, it is a hard position. And then the other side of that is, I want them involved though. I love that they're passionate about the things that I'm doing. So I don't want to discourage them from being involved with that, So the short answer is, we talked about this quite a bit, I personally leave all feelings aside when it comes to casting. I truly do. I may tear up about it. I may cry about it. I may be brokenhearted about it, but I truly try to do what's best for the show. So at the end of the day, I could say I did what I think was best for the show. And I've lost relationships over it. I've lost friends. I don't think I'll lose a daughter or a son over it. But the truth is, I will recuse myself. I've done it before where I step out and go, hey, you guys decide. But that's before it was my theater with Steve. Now I really just try to do what's best for the show. And then just have that honest conversation with my family, my friends ahead of time, saying, hey, you're coming out for this role, which I'm excited about, but no, I'm going to cast what's fair, and you may not like the outcome, but I'm going to do what's fair. And I stand true to that. Even behind closed doors, if there wasn't a microphone in front of me, if you weren't sitting here, I know I sit here by myself and go, I'm going to do what's right. And now it is hard when it comes down to two people that are equally talented. If you put them on a scale, it's the same weight, same vocals, same acting skills. It is hard because then you start to question, well, then what do I base it off of? Well, then it comes down to loyalty. Who I know will go lay a chicken, balk like a chicken and lay an egg for me. Who won't question me and who won't cause drama backstage? Who will help move scenery on stage without causing drama? Then I start going a little deeper. Who has the best attitude backstage? So then I add that in. But 9 times out of 10, most 10 out of 10, I choose what's best for the show. But it's not to say that it's not easy or not. It's not easy at all. Not to say it's not hard. It is hard. So I think that's the way I approach it, is just be fair across the board. So then you never can say, well, last time I gave them that opportunity. But it will come down to that. Sometimes if the scale's even, well, this show, I'm going to give them this role. the next show, if they both come out and they're both equally ready for it, maybe I'll give it to the other side. So
I got to tell you, like, one of my daughters right now, she's been back and forth. She wants to act. Mm. She wants to act in film and TV shows. And she writes me these huge letters. Like, she wants to go to LA. She wants to get an agent. She wants to go to auditions. And I'm just like, no, we're not doing that. And, she's like, and I give her other options. Like, there's a lot you can do locally. You can do this. And she lets it go for a while. And then, you know, I'll get another huge email. I mean, these things are like small essays that are actually, no, they're not even small essays. They're just essays. She's done all these research and put out links. And she's like, I'm going to get my license soon and I'll be able to drive to LA. No, you're not going to LA. Like, I personally think that the price of gasoline and the, I don't know, rejection from auditions after a while will get, oh, I mean, it's like, that is one hard business to break into if you're doing that approach, especially if you do not live in LA already and you've got to pay for gas right now. But it is hard, seeing as, like, you know, how much she really wants it. And if I had a role to give her, but it could go to somewhere else, someone else, that is a hard one to be in. But what would you say to, I mean, we've kind of answered for ourselves, but there's got to be other people out there with theaters in the situation. I mean, maybe it's not their kids. Maybe it is their friends. Maybe, and you know, does loyalty go beyond talent?
I think sometimes, I have a lot of talented friends. I have a lot of talented friends, like really cool people that are talented. But some of those friends that are talented are not the best people to work with, though. Like, I'm like, I don't want you to come here. You'll cause drama. You're probably one of the most talented people I know, but with you comes a certain type of baggage. So I do think the sense of loyalty does matter at some point.
Well, and I know people may think, like, they may listen to that, and that may be a strange question to them. Like, what do you mean, loyalty or talent? But we'll picture it like this. Like, if somebody comes in and they're really, really talented, they're awesome, but they're just going to be here for one show, as opposed to somebody that you want to invest in and you know that they're going to be around for many, many, many years. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know what? I like this place. I live just down the street. I'm going to invest here. Use me if you want. I may not be that good right now. That could be a chance where you do vote loyalty over talent. Like, you know what? That other person's got an edge on you right now, but I know that you're going to be here when they're gone. So they're kind of the one-hit wonder here if we cast them, but you sound like you're for all time. Maybe we should invest in you. I mean, that's something to think of, too.
It is, and that's a hard position, and I try to draw lines there because even certain donors sometimes will be like, my grandson would be amazing in this role. I'm like, he would. Have him come on audition. Like, yeah, he might be good at it. Have him come on audition. So I try to keep those lines drawn, but we'd be liars if we didn't sit there and go, this guy's been here for 27 shows painting the stage, has not made a show yet, but he's painting the stage every day. He's here working, putting his sweat equity in just to be involved. He's not doing it for ulterior motive, you hope. And all of a sudden he comes out for a role and you're like, all right, let's take a chance on this dude. So there is some sense of loyalty, yeah. But I do think there's a fine line that you don't cross because you don't want it to be like works get you action. That's not good either. So you have to be careful of that.
I don't know. There is a when you see that level of investment, though.
I know
that it. I think that is worth taking care of people at that point in time when they've, you know, done all that for you, and they're just like, you know what? Yeah, well, I think we are going to invest in you this time around. Yeah.
I think that's fair. I'm pretty driven by loyalty, so you know how I feel about that.
I do, but. Yeah, I mean, I guess for the other people that are struggling with the casting, that's something to think of, too. Like, I was just in a, and I can't remember if we talked about this on the podcast or not, but I was on the board of this other theater, and they cast a show, and it was a really popular show. A lot of people came out for this title, and they ended up giving the lead role to somebody that drove in from out of town, like wait, like about an hour and a half drive from out of town, and isn't going to do another show with that theater again, probably. Just the title drew them in. They wanted that title on their resume, so they drove out for it. And then the question came up with, like, the board of directors, like, I kind of wish we didn't cast, you know, I kind of wish the director maybe hadn't cast outside of the community for that role, just because we can invest in our local actors here for it and stuff like that. And there's, you know, many, many people that have come out to that theater and audition often, as opposed to somebody who did it just one time. And, you know, I'm not saying either way, but I am just going to say it is a topic of discussion for your particular theater, because, you know, you will have those people that are just there in your community, in your area, that will want to invest in your theater. And then you just have the people that show up. And so think about that, loyalty over talent. And I guess, you know, we're not just assuming, I think we're maybe assuming that the talent factor is at least comparable.
Yeah. It has. Yeah. Yeah.
Like your character, you're like, your loyal person doesn't, you know, they can at least do a show.
Yeah. They can't, they suck and aren't good at all.
Yeah. They can learn lines, or they can match pitch, or, you know, something like that. They're not horrible. They're not going to ruin your show, but maybe they're not just quite where the other person is, but still, who gets the investment? Mm-hmm. Right there. And that is just something to think about. But you were talking about backstage drama. Mm-hmm. And this goes to our next point.
Well, actually, I want to say one thing before you go there.
Oh, one thing. Okay.
I like this. I like their next topic. But to tag into Shane's question, another thing that's hard about family or friends, say, I'll use Shane as an example. He's my brother. He actually wrote this question. Say he's coming out for, say, we're doing Little Mermaid and he wants to be Prince Eric only. I just say that. I'm giving hypothetically. He's never said that to me. Mm-hmm. But say he wants to play Prince Eric only. He comes out. He auditions. And I know his heart's set on it. Since he was 8 years old, that's been his dream role. And I want to cast him in the show because he would play a perfect Sebastian. But he doesn't want that role. That's not his dream role. That's where it gets hard for me. It's like, I'm not going to give you what you're wanting, but I'm going to give you this. And a lot of times people miss that opportunity because they're like, no, I only want this role only. But in the reality is, if you play that role, you may realize, oh my gosh, I am the Sebastian, or I am the whatever. And I think that's where it gets hard for me, is because we have a lot of talented friends and family. And when they come out, it's like, I know you want to be this role only, but trust me, this is where you see fit with this vision of the show. And I think actors forget to sometimes think, what's the director's vision? They think about, what's my vision? So anyway,
I mean, I think anybody's been there. Everybody's been there. If you're an actor, you have the role that you want to play.
Yep.
And I mean, I've gotten to play some of those roles, and I have gotten to watch those roles pass me right by and watch other people play the roles. But, to your point that you made, two things. One, like you said, you might find out that the other role isn't so bad. You just have to be willing to let go of your dream, at least for this particular show. Maybe you get in some other production. But so you're going to try this role this time. The other thing, though, is I think an actor's opinion of what role they should play will change really, really quickly. If you cast Eric... I mean, you cast Shane as Prince Eric, and the audience didn't buy into it.
Right. You failed.
Opening night, he's going to hear those comments.
It's going to hurt him, too, in the long run.
They're going to be like, what? What are they thinking? Did you see that guy? That's not Prince Eric. Why isn't it? On the other hand, if they're like, oh, my gosh, did you see Sebastian? That guy was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And they keep doing that, and he's just like, yeah, I'm Sebastian. So that can go either way, too. But the feedback from the audience, that's going to change opinions real quick, I think, right there. But then moving on to the next one.
Yeah, go for it.
We've got up here. Okay, politics in the theater.
Yeah.
Political talk in the theater. You mentioned drama backstage. And this is something that we talk about now and then. But it just seems like every theater has got it. It will at some point, to some level. Maybe it doesn't have to be a huge level, but there's just always seems to be backstage drama going on. We're actors, for heaven's sakes. Yep. What we do.
We're drama.
We are drama. But do you have a rule on political talk here?
I do. Our whole plus at orientation, I tell everyone from the start when they come and sit down and go, "Hey everyone, thanks for being here, Legendary Productions." Blah blah blah. I'm just open up. The very first thing I say is, "No religion or politics in here. Leave it outside. Unity through art. We want unity in here. We want to create art together. If you want to talk to me about politics or religion, let's go have coffee. I don't drink coffee. Let's go have breakfast or lunch.
I don't drink coffee.
I don't either. I don't like
coffee. Do that.
But sometimes I'll eat a coffee bean just because it's nasty and it's weird. But I don't like coffee at all. So, yeah, it's weird. But we can go talk outside of here all day long. And I'll tell you where I stand and where you stand. And hopefully we can agree to disagree agreeably. But in here, no politics, no religion. Let's keep it about creating art together. And that's where I say unity through art. So
I bring this up because, man, I've got a very talented person that I work with and just an incredibly skilled musician.
Mm-hmm.
And very opinionated and likes to tell everybody. And I've just like seen them go to Facebook pages and just start an unprovoked political fight. And I'm just watching him like, dude, stop it. These are our friends. You're like tearing it apart.
The hard part is in their personal life, they could do what they want. They could post outside these doors in their car. They could say they hate me. They could say they hate Republicans, conservatives, liberals. They could say whatever they want. Independents. They could say whatever they want outside here. But when they come in here, it's not allowed because I want people to just create art together. And it's hard because I too have some friends like that are extreme on both sides of the track. And I'm like, guys, you're just causing division. It's almost to have your conversation with you, talk to them. And I'm not saying they shouldn't stand up for what they want. They can do what they want. They can believe in unicorns outside these doors. When they come in here, don't want it. Don't want to hear it. That's not what we're here for. We're here to create.
Yeah.
So what do you do about it? Like, does he bring it up at rehearsals and stuff, or she?
It's not brought up. I've never seen it brought up at rehearsals, like it is brought up on social media all the time. And then while it's not mentioned in the room, like there's this grudge that's brought into the room.
Like a cloud, you could tell.
Yeah, you could feel. I mean, you could tell because these people have been going at it back and forth on social media. Like, you know, like you know, the little picture of the guy that just sits in front of the computer screen eating the popcorn while they watch this huge fight unfold. And like, you know, that's what everybody's doing. They're just going at it over here. And then they walk into a rehearsal and it's like, you know, it's all tense and everything. And
I think your job, in my opinion, your job would be to bring up the fact that you're there to create together and that's all you're there for. And hopefully that just reminds them that they could have different beliefs. And you could say that. You could have to believe in belief systems. You could believe in unicorns, believe in what you want. But here, it's about creating this masterpiece right now. And that's what we should be focusing on. Outside here, you could hate each other. But here, we're creating something. We get the opportunity. During COVID, we didn't get to do this. We took it for granted how often we got to come and create art together. And now, we have that opportunity again. You're going to ruin that? Don't ruin that in this space. And that's what I would say. And I have said that.
Yeah. That just, you know, it made me think of a friend Gabe that.
Yeah, he was on our podcast.
Yeah, he got shot. You know, back when you were talking about COVID and not sure if we were going to be able to do this again.
Walk again. Yeah, live again.
Yeah, he wasn't sure if you'd live, right?
Yep.
And then, you know, and then when it comes out, okay, you're going to be okay, but will you ever get to perform again?
To dance and sing and
move. And to do all that. Now we're happy to say that, you know, he is back in many shows now.
Yep.
All going well. But yeah, I mean, like what a time. And well, we didn't know how this was going to look after COVID.
No, I had no idea. We had Godspell set and all of a sudden we're like, what?
Yeah. But you remember, it just became like would theater ever recover?
That was a question that was on newspapers. Broadway was closing their doors. Everything was, that was a question for everyone.
Because, yeah, because then do you remember they were talking about, like, okay, well, we can go back out, but still rooms were not more than 20 people in a room. Or, like, sorry, theaters will have to have a ventilation system put in them and air constantly flowing and, like,
mask, where it put a screen up in front of the audience and your actors.
And yeah, and there's going to have to be separation in the seats and everything, so you're not too close to each other. And we're just like, how is any theater going to survive on this? Like,
yep.
Type thing. And so we literally didn't know. I remember, like, reading articles that were saying Broadway may not ever reopen.
I remember
that. So I'm glad to see that, you know, it is reopening now, but I just, man, I remember that. It's just like, that's
so my
that's
point wild. Is, are we going to let our indifferences in the world really affect us while we're trying to create art together? Something that we forgot that we almost lost the opportunity to do.
Yeah. It is crazy that it was just a couple of years ago and we'd already forgot. We get back to normal and we're like, okay, commonplace now.
Yeah. But every day, every time we close a show or I'm sitting at the, I talk to the cast before our closing night. I thank them, but I sit there while they're talking, telling about their experience. I sit there and I truly do get teary-eyed, and I tear up a little bit and just look and go, how lucky we are that we get to do this. Without this world called theater, some of my closest friends are people I met during theater over 30 years ago. Some over 20 years ago. And I know, in this very room. Without theater, being able to come somewhere from different walks of life, different belief systems, different political stuff, we would never have the opportunity if we didn't have that sense of unity together. You know what I mean? So yeah, talk to him, Mike. Put him on blast.
We should bring him on the podcast.
Okay.
We'll let him have it right here.
Okay.
You sit in this
Do I
chair.
Know them?
No.
Okay, good. Then bring him.
bring
him. And maybe it's something we talk about.
But I would just say to everybody, to remember that. I mean, just like what Nathan said, it's not the time or the place for it.
Unity through art. Just remember that. That's what we're here to create.
Yeah.
Don't forget that we have that opportunity to do that. At home, we were playing with puppets and watching YouTube channels. That's all we did during COVID. Well, some people, but I was building a theater. But I think it's so easy to forget that, and it's so sad. It's and I think that can go political, but we won't talk about that right now. But
yes. Yeah, so, all right. Well, I guess we will wrap up this episode of the Upstaging Gentlemen podcast, but good to be back recording with you, Nathan.
Sounds good. I love it, dude. It's been so good. John, thanks for helping always being here, making us, well, at least recording us, making us sound decent. I know we suck, but
you have to edit us whenever we slip
when you
up.
Say,
and say,
when you
say
damn, I think he has to edit that out.
Words. Don't edit that, man. That was a solid. Solid damn.
That was pretty damn good.
It was damn fantastic. It was, yep.
All right. Anyway, well, thank you guys, and please reach out to us on our Facebook, our YouTube, or not our YouTube, our webpage, and chat with us, ask questions, reach out to us, give us feedback. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and to our listeners in Germany, we still have no idea who you are, but we'd love seeing you just up here. So thank you for listening out there. And we're like the David Hasselhoffs of podcasts. We're big in Germany.
I'll wear leather pants if you want.
That's right.
That'd be cool.
All right, we'll catch you later, everyone.
Beach. That'd be embarrassing.
That's it for this episode of the Upstaging Gentlemen podcast.
Later.
Bye, guys.